the liver is and should be a discussion hot on everyone's mind. It's a very common thing to hear discussed. We have this sort of traditional understanding of the liver as being really important in systemic health on every level. And it's somewhat changed over the years, largely, I think, because the traditional approach to the liver just doesn't work on the modern condition. The person is too inflamed, they're too depleted, they're too out of balance to just take traditional liver remedies and get them well. You have to do some homework. And what we're finding is that we can take a person, put them on a nutritional program that's designed to balance them from what we understand is the depletion of generations now. And at the end of that, which might take 3 to 5 years, it's not quick, although we're getting better at it. And I think, unfortunately, there aren't a lot of people dealing with it appropriately, I think. So we haven't had a lot of help from other sources, but we're getting better at it. And I do think it'll be possible in the future, in 1 to 2 years, to get the nutrition levels back to where they should be. Once we do, then what we find is that putting the person on what I consider to be an ideal diet, which is basically what you find in Tracy's transformational kitchen health principles, especially leaning toward 70%+ raw. If you get on that ideal program and then use the traditional remedies, they work just fine. They work just like they should, just like they have in the literature, and you don't find any gaps there. We do find gaps if you just take Joe Public off the street, walks in, and they've got all these symptoms that ought to be liver related, and put them on a traditional liver program. It doesn't really work. You've got to put some groundwork down first, sandbags and levees upstream, so to speak. So we're going to come back to what that entails. In fact, what you should really listen to is The Modern Condition, and I've got 3 recordings on that and some written discussion, and definitely start there if you have any of those kinds of symptoms. And then in due course, you'll be ready to go ahead and take care of the liver like it should be. So what I'm going to do now for the next few minutes is talk to you about what the liver symptoms really are. So the liver is in charge of all kinds of metabolic processes. Now, the traditional liver model didn't overlap very well exactly with Western medicine, and it didn't overlap very well exactly with Chinese medicine. But it is the most widespread, and truth be known, at least as old as the Chinese model of the liver. It's just a different way of looking at things. If you tried to put the Chinese template of the 5 elements over top of the traditional liver understanding, what you'd find is that they understood kind of a triad of elements working together that they dubbed liver and that definitely centered in the liver. So at least we would have to think of liver health in terms of liver, gallbladder, pancreas, stomach, small intestine. At a minimum, you would have to look at the liver in that, and probably large intestine too, which would give you, from Chinese medicine, what I call the liver triad, which is where you have wood feeding fire, and fire controlling metal, and metal controlling wood. And we find that really was that's really the essence of that discussion, but including the stomach as well, which is earth, and which gives us that center to begin from. And so you're going to find, if you're a Chinese medicine buff, you're going to find that just using the template over the traditional liver approach is a little messy, but the traditional liver concept, I think is the most useful for looking at and diagnosing in a Western setting what's happening with a person. And when we have that information, we can keep our eye on the ball. We can realize, hey, at some point we've got to get this liver working. And as the nutrition comes up, we're going to have to think in terms of how do we get the liver to work properly. And maybe we'll be able to do traditional liver cleansing, activating carminative herbs, which would be things like barberry for cleansing. We would have things like fennel, peppermint, cardamom. Those would be both activating and carminative herbs that would affect liver activity levels. And then depending on what other kinds of weird things the liver is doing, and we find that the liver behaves a certain way and sets the stage for how the whole body behaves. So if the whole person is prone to inflammation and fatty deposition, the liver will be doing the same thing. If the whole person is prone to be cold and withdrawn, the liver will be doing the same thing. If the person just can't get their metabolism active, it's because the liver will not get active. And we find that thyroid, which I will treat separately, but it is a subset. It is a result of that chronic liver dysfunction. Adrenals, same thing. Gut chemistry, which I absolutely focus on gut chemistry in the beginning of a healing program with people as an entity unto itself. I treat it as though it's an isolated thing, but actually it is the product of a healthy liver. You just can't do traditional liver remedies and arrive at that outcome, though. It's just there's more to it than that. So let's talk about some of the symptoms that are traditionally or ought to be related to liver. And remember, this is liver, gallbladder, small intestine, stomach, pancreas, large intestine, probably to some extent. That whole digestive center that functions in the abdomen of the body. Okay, so first of all, if we see swelling around that in any way, shape, or form, you have a liver problem. That is, by definition, a liver thing. So this is going to include bloat. It's going to include just fat around your organs. It's going to include just a general larger belly that doesn't match the rest of your body. It's going to include any of those kinds of functions. And we find that there have been some kind of liver issue going on for a long time before we get things like heart failure, before we get kidney problems. The liver really is the beginning of that. It's like, you know, five elements are interesting in Chinese medicine because they are these existential concepts that seem to always apply. And if you like that, this might help, because the growth of the new plant, which is wood, comes from the earth. Without a healthy earth, you can't grow the new plant. And it does need water, which is the kidney, urinary bladder system. But the earth decides whether it's going to grow favorably or not. And then the minerals that it picks up are more like metal, and control that growth and keep it healthy. And that really is the essence of new growth being healthy and green and productive and looking and functioning like it should. In any case, we discuss the liver and call it the liver because the liver is at the center, really, of this process going like it should. The liver represents all of the growth, the metabolic functions, the activities, the important details taking place everywhere. It doesn't just represent them. It is in charge of them. It manages in one way or another every cell of the body. It is the most complicated, most sophisticated organ. And we can use the liver as a diagnostic tool by using these traditional liver indicators. And And with a little bit of palpation and some questions, we can determine what kind of liver challenge we're dealing with. So we hear a little bit about metabolic liver, but that's just one version of what can go wrong. That's just one expression of illness in that whole system. And to be sure, it's becoming an increasingly common one simply because we continue to eat a large percentage of processed cooked food and a large percentage of processed vegetable oils, which I've said elsewhere are the reason for the modern condition. The way we created the modern condition was with those processed vegetable oils. And if you're serious about turning things around, you're going to have to be equally serious about avoiding those processed vegetable oils. And those are corn, canola, soy, sunflower, all of those high omega-6 processed oils that you don't really find any method for obtaining them in nature. You couldn't do it in a cave. So we are not talking about olive and coconut oil. Those are fine. They're also not very helpful for the modern condition. They're very good for you, but they don't help the modern condition very much. We need fish oil and butter and raw dehydrated organ meats and things like that to really turn around the modern condition. So in any case, back to the liver. Other things, so we can look at the whole person. Let's state it that way. And we can say, okay, this person's got a belly, this person's got bloat, this person's got a disproportionate size around that area, or this person is cold and doesn't, you know, is not very open to new things. We can ask them some questions about symptoms, things like, how do you react to fruit? For example, people who have troubles with fruit, that's always a liver that just doesn't open up and act. And sometimes we'll find multiple conditions which make no sense at all. We'll have a liver that's inflamed and fatty and metabolic, and the same liver doesn't open up and act when fruit is put in the system. And that's frustrating. Fruit actually helps the liver very much. It's one of my favorite things. I think everybody should have a fruit breakfast, or maybe a fresh juice breakfast, and then a fruit brunch, and then a vegetable, maybe some fish or something like that for lunch, or some grass-fed beef, something like that. And then maybe not, maybe just have some more juice again in the evening and have that be the evening meal. This really helps us. For our liver people, we definitely want something of a wheatgrass type supplement with that juice each time. So Dr. Christopher Original Formulas, and you'll find this on this site, Jurassic Green, that is a wonderful, wonderful product that you can put a heaping tablespoon in your juice every morning and every evening, and you're going to get all the benefits because it's raw, it's flash dried. You can also use Pines wheatgrass tablets. Those, of course, are dehydrated and pressed, but also very, very good quality. And so those are the two that I have around my house all the time. There are some other products that I like, but none that I would take every day for long term. Those two I would take every day for long term because they don't have anything in that I think is going to throw me off or throw anybody else off. The Jurassic Green is just wheatgrass, barley grass, and alfalfa, and the Pines wheatgrass tablets are just wheatgrass, and they're very building. They're going to tonify and smooth out that liver over time. It might take a couple of years of taking it every day or nearly every day to get that liver to be where it really should be, but it will eventually happen if your diet is on point at the same time. So I haven't finished with the diagnostic indicators of the liver. Anytime we have abnormal inflammation in the body, that is a liver issue. Anytime we have gut reactions, that is a liver issue, right? If the liver was managing the gut chemistry correctly, you wouldn't have any problems with food reactions. You would not have any problems with abnormal microbiome in there, the the bacteria and fungi and a few viruses and protozoas and all of that that should be existing together to form the healthy microbiome of the gut is healthy, stays normal if the liver is managing the gut chemistry. Now, do we treat the gut chemistry independently? Yes, we do. I am an enormous fan of big doses of dandelion to get that. I sometimes will use dandelion, hawthorn, and kelp all concurrently. Not you take the hawthorn in the morning, the kelp at midday, and the dandelion in the evening or in the afternoon. To regulate that gut chemistry, it is the best thing out there that can be done. I've looked at everything else that I can find, and nothing is even close. And you're going to spend huge amounts of dollars on high-quality probiotics and never get the benefit that you get from those three, or from the dandelion root alone, for that matter. Dandelion root alone, 10 capsules all at once, it is simply magic. And partly, perhaps, because of its benefit on the liver, too. Although I wonder sometimes if it's the other way around, if the liver benefits because of the benefit on the gut. This system is very intertwined, and it's hard sometimes to know, perhaps because it isn't always the same way, which one comes first, the gut misfiring or the liver misfiring. But if the liver didn't misfire a little, you would never have the gut issues, period. You also don't get cancer unless you have liver problems. The liver problem has to be there first. The liver's not functioning like it should. It's not able, for some reason, either behaviorally or toxicity or nutritionally or enzymatically, or maybe there's just too much load on it in your chemicals in your environment and in your food and your processed food. But for some reason, it is not able to manage things metabolically like it should, and then and only then do we have conditions for cancer. You just don't get it without that. The idea of of vaccinations causing cancer has been postulated. It's been tested and shown in animal testing. It's been shown for a long time. We know that that vaccines are very high risk, that it's very possible that they're causing a dozen cases of cancer for every case of the illness they're supposedly supposed to prevent, that they statistically are alleged to have prevented. I know it's a mouthful, but there's some, all of that's been called into question. It looks to the active researcher who researches the critical vantage point of vaccinations, you come away thinking it's at least probable from articles published in medical journals. This is not some weird random left wing, you know, far out already stoned hippie research plan, right? This is from medical journal articles, the CDC reports and numbers, right? It appears that there may in fact be kind of a big scam going on with vaccination. They don't really do what we told that they do, and that they are causing lots and lots of cases of cancer. And so when you look at that and weigh them, especially in light of natural healing, because if you understood natural healing, you would have nothing to fear from any of those diseases. So you first of all would have a zero risk to begin with. Right, or very, very close to zero, because we find very small children do have to get sick a few times to develop their immune systems. So it's not, the risk isn't zero, but it can get pretty darn low. And so if you have that risk to begin with, and then you say, well, this is something that is going to likely cause a lot of cases of cancer, it gets hard to submit to vaccinations. People sometimes will try to pretend you're a Holocaust denier if you say that you don't want vaccinations, you don't believe in them. But the truth is, it's the medical profession's own research that calls it into question. It doesn't fall on the shoulders of a bunch of weirdos. It's their own material. In fact, the drug companies producing the vaccinations have standards that you're supposed to meet, and frankly, most people wouldn't meet those. If we really investigated the standards and really paired the person up with the standards, we would find that a minority, maybe 30%, maybe 20% of people would even be eligible to be vaccinated. So based on that, that's far from being a Holocaust denier. You're just trying to do what the official documentation says to do. And yet nobody's taking that seriously. Nobody treats it with any respect whatsoever. And we have medical doctors who are belligerent and arrogant. And now this is what earns them a bad reputation among natural healers, right? Statements like this: I guarantee you the vaccination will do you no harm, right? What kind of idiotic, arrogant, God complex jerk would say such a thing, right? He has no way of knowing that, period. Not to mention the fact that his own research has evidence against that, right? So, obviously, not all medical doctors do that. I have great friends in the medical profession. I am not anti-medicine at all. But I think the way that it is frequently approached when it comes to vaccinations is a little bit beyond the scope of professionalism there. In any case, our vaccination question, I kind of went off on that. But when it comes to the liver, here we're taking a chemical with at least a pathogenic protein fragment, right? If you believe that that's the only things in there. I think if you research how vaccines are made, you find that questionable. But, and again, medical journal articles out there to support what I'm saying. So this is not... this is not just me questioning that without enough information on the matter. But I think if you think about that being injected into the body and then a winding up at the liver, and the liver is now supposed to figure out what to do with this, there's likely to be an inflammatory response. Anybody who knows anything about vaccinations knows that inflammatory responses are not just possible, they're probable, they're likely to occur. Okay, so we're gonna got that to deal with, and then we've got this toxic chemicals, heavy metals, formaldehyde, things like that, that are going to hit the liver. Liver now has to deal with that in the presence of a pathogenic protein, or at least protein fragment. And of course, there's some potential for kind of an abnormal toxic response at the liver, which may set the liver up, especially if it was already kind of weak to begin with, for a lot of disease down the road. So to me, vaccines have to be part of the liver discussion. If you really want them to not be damaging to your life, you should consider perhaps just giving them up. Now, as I said, the modern liver condition, it may take years to get the person actually well enough that they can be free from that condition. What we want to talk about, of course, next is what do we do about that modern condition, and what do we do about the modern liver? Okay, so I've already given you some things. Now I'm going to go through a list of things that we want to think about. Okay. So first of all, absolutely, in the beginning, we want to avoid the 6 sensitive foods, which again, the 6 sensitive foods, according to me, my list, I had another person's list to start with. I used it for years, and over time, the list evolved based on my clinical experience. So I stand responsible for it, and no disrespect to the people I got the list from. It was very helpful, but my list is this: dairy and wheat, corn and soy, including all corn and soy products, oils, corn sweeteners, corn starch, everything related to corn. Chocolate and peanuts. Those are my 6. And chocolate and peanuts you may be able to have, but I find it wise to initially avoid them altogether while we're getting your nutrition back on point. Okay. And then it is a given that you're going to avoid all processed food, but what you find is it's hard to consume processed food while avoiding those 6 things. So that tends to be good enough. But obviously, if you've got chemical dyes and preservatives and flavorings and things like that that are not natural at all, get them out of your food. A new question has arisen about anything sold in a plastic or Mylar bag. because of sprays they put on the inside of the bag to make sure that it is sterile. Now, what percentage of those are treated, I don't know. What I do know is when I actually started investigating actual products, I found that somewhere around 8 out of 10 items in a plastic bag had some kind of negative toxic effect on the human body. So whether that is a spray on the inside of the bag or something about the plastic itself, or maybe the plastic was exposed to heat, I don't know. I simply don't know exactly what is happening, only that it is happening. And for now, that's going to have to be good enough. So perhaps we want to be a little cautious about getting anything in a plastic bag. And, you know, frankly, we need to make a serious change about plastics in our world anyway. The plastic situation is bad. It's bad news. Everybody knows it, and but so many people are just kind of willing to go on with what works. And many people, myself included, frequently don't know what to do different. Right? You can buy paper bags you can get paper bags as an option at many grocery stores, Whole Foods, things like that. That's certainly preferable. It may not always be. If you're someone who reuses and reuses and reuses plastic bags, maybe that makes sense in some cases, but generally speaking, we want to be careful about that. But for the liver, it's a concern. All right. Now, initially, as I've said before, we need to get the gut acidified, so we're going to use Zypan for that from Standard Process, which of course is available on this site. And we're going to want to restore gut and microbiome. So for that, 10 dandelion root capsules all at once, anytime, but in the afternoon seems to be slightly better. I don't really know why. I have a theory, but nothing I can tell you really. And then we're going to want to look at the overall condition and deal with getting the person balanced, especially if they're really inflamed. We may be on, I've talked before about Immuplex and Antrinex and possibly Gastrex to help normalize inflammation levels coming off the gut. We might want to do that every day for a while. We might want to take some calcium lactate for a while. We're definitely going to need fish oil, grass-fed butter at a minimum, maybe some raw egg yolks, and again, I am a fan of, if I can get high quality, if I know it's 100% grass-fed or if it's wild meat, and I can get the liver, the kidneys, and the heart and slice them thin and dehydrate them at room temperature, then those can be kept in the freezer to keep them good, and just about a half dollar sized piece, if you remember, you know, the metal half dollar is a little bigger than a quarter, every day. That's very, very helpful during this initial healing process, getting the mineral levels and the nutrient levels back up. For minerals, we take Mintran before bed, another Standard Process product, very helpful for peaceful sleep, and very helpful as we try to remineralize the body. TJ Clark mineral water in a little bit of juice, at least for 3 or 4 months. Afterward, that becomes less useful, but initially for 3 or 4 months, it can be extremely useful just to get the body back to a state where it can have all of the trace minerals it needs. So that's kind of the replenishment program. We, depending on the person and their stress levels, things like that, we may need Cataplex B12, which is a Standard Process product, or trace minerals with B12, both of which we carry as options. And this is our baseline program. Now, that's going to go on until the nutrient levels start to come up, and the person will know. Things will start to change, like what they're interested in eating. and how much, and they'll start to just feel like they're no longer craving the quick pick-me-up foods, or at least those cravings get down to where they're manageable. Now, something I didn't mention among the symptoms of the liver is if a person cannot seem to fast or juice fast, first of all, if they try to fast or juice fast and they don't lose weight, that's liver, okay? Always, every time, no question about it, okay? And then if the person just can't seem to, they get so ravenously hungry, that's liver. The liver is not doing its catabolic activities where it breaks things down and provides you nutrition. It's just not working. So that is a liver thing. A person who eats and then crashes, needing to pull over the side of the road and sleep, that is a liver thing, right? And so we're going to need to get rid of the liver congestion and the liver load and get this person's liver back to well. But again, it might be a journey. It might take some time. So this is where our program here comes in. And for general diet, we want the person 75 to 90% raw. And when I say raw, I'm referring to fruits and vegetables. I am not referring to nuts and seeds and legumes and those kinds of things. Legumes are okay if they are green, but the bulk of our diet needs to be the raw fruits and vegetables. And then we can throw some of those other things in. And then you need to look. We've got a video on here that's links to YouTube that's for liver exercises. It also shows you kidney and heart and stomach and spleen. And but that liver exercise especially should be done several times a day. And you really have to relax and just think about nothing, just brushing across the liver if you want it to work. If you're stressed at all or you're just wound up in your head, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So just forget about it if that's the case. So, all right. So I think that that kind of covers the basics. That's all fairly short term. The liver exercise might be long term, and the dietary guidelines of high percentage raw are long term. Shorter term, or long term supplement wise for the liver, we're going to take a wheatgrass supplement every day for the rest of our lives. If you have a liver history, then wheatgrass is your friend. You're going to want to take it forever. So that's one thing. And then as the whole system starts to heal, Dr. Christopher's liver gallbladder formula is going to be very, very useful. Now, I've got a kid's liver recording that you may want to listen to if you've got a kid who doesn't have an appetite or certainly won't eat anything healthy. That you want to go to the liver for that. And for that, we use Dr. Christopher's formula right off the bat because it works so well. But for the adult, we may not want to use it right off the bat or just sparingly, a couple of them, you know, night and morning for a week or so, and then take a couple of weeks off and just kind of play with that until you start to restore normal conditions inside. And then we're going to be able to take those standard process products and drop those off. And we're going to be able to use Dr. Christopher's liver gallbladder formula, dandelion, and wheatgrass, manage that liver forever. Now, I do use, people going to ask, they should ask, what about milk thistle, that kind of thing. I use Thistlin from Nature's Way, which you can buy on here, and I use maybe a turmeric supplement for people that I think have a serious liver pathology going on, where I think eventually it's going to kill them if we don't treat it actively. The liver is swollen. It's hard every time I feel it. The person has bad breath, or the person just looks like they've got a lot of liver inflammation. That person, I'm going to be thinking, all right, how can I treat that liver for life? They'll be on the wheatgrass and dandelion maybe for life. Dandelion, the dandelion root, you don't take for life exactly. You take it for a month, and then you take 3 months off, and then you take it for a month. So 3 or 4 times a year, you're going to do a month of dandelion. And yeah, you might do that for life. That would be fine. You don't just take it straight through all the time. Your body gets tired of it, and then suddenly you can't use it. And now the benefit that it has for you has disappeared because you can't use it. Your body's just sick of it. So that's kind of the plan there. Don't underestimate the value of castor oil when it comes to the liver. A castor oil implant or injection, this is not going in your arm, this is going in your rectum. This is like an enema, except instead of putting in 2 or 3 or 4 cups, you're putting in maybe 4 to 8 ounces. And instead of allowing that to void, you're going to retain it for as long as possible. And so if the bowels are clean or relatively clean, then, or at least clear, and you put this in and just hold it, the urge will go away. It'll pass later, you know, within a few hours, but the urge to void right then will go away, and it'll be pulled up right into the liver and start cleaning the liver out. So that's something we should never underestimate the value of. I do think that we have a rising epidemic of liver flukes. I don't know where they're coming from. It doesn't make any sense to me. When I first read about Huldah Clark's program, I couldn't find any evidence that liver flukes were part of the life of most of my patients. But that's changed. It's changed in the last 5 years or so. And so you could do Huldah Clark's program. At the time of this recording, I don't have a place for those on the site at the moment, but they'll probably be here soon, so keep checking. What does seem to work sufficiently in my practice, it has to be done regularly to purge them out for a while, but a big dose of cloves. So I'll just use cloves capsules and take maybe 5 or 6 of those with my fruit in the morning. And not only does that facilitate the liver moving, but it paralyzes and kills those flukes. Huldah Clark said it paralyzes them. That may be true, but it does seem to work very well to sort of knock them down. And then if that's done, you know, once or twice a week, that is sufficient to keep that liver clear. You don't have a buildup of them and the inflammatory response making things not move. So there could be a connection there between cancer and liver flukes. I don't know where they're coming from. But the evidence I have for them, I haven't been able to see them or anything. The evidence I have is just the use of cloves works very well to get over the hump in liver function. So I'm making the assumption that it's liver flukes. It could be another source of inflammation, and the cloves is somehow managing that. I don't know. I don't have conclusive evidence on that point at this time. But it looks that way, and the condition is on the rise, and so I think the liver flukes are on the rise. That's what I think is happening. So we don't want to forget that either. Also, with the castor oil, we might just want to massage the whole abdomen with it and maybe the whole back with it. Get a massage with castor oil maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks at the very least. So that's going to help. That castor oil gets into the blood and it hits the liver and it catharts the liver. It gets everything moving in there. So people with specific liver problems, like a cold liver or a person who can't eat fruit, probably need to actually contact me and arrange a consult where we can discuss their situation and put them on a plan specific for them. All right, I think that's everything I've got to talk about the liver at this time, and we try to put a synopsis down below of the key points on all of these recordings, so you can just go say, okay, now what was I supposed to remember, and here's the list, right? So we'll have that there for you as well.